This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The farm show is kind of like a county fair and kind of not. It's got animals and tractors, and there are still a few contests, the best honey, the best hay, silage, and Christmas trees. There are lots of informational displays, and there is some food, hot dogs, corn dogs, chili. But it's not really geared towards the general public the way the fairs are. This is first and foremost a trade show, a place to learn about new products for your farm or forestry operation. It's a chance to talk shop with other people in the agriculture sector and to get yourself prepared for the growing season that's fast approaching. We've been broadcasting live from the farm show for 3 years now, checking out the latest news, looking at agriculture and water pollution cleanup, etc. This year, we're taking a more freewheeling approach. Our producers fanned out this morning and just talked to people, getting ideas, seeing what was interesting. So we think we have a full hour ready for you, but some of it's going to happen on the fly. So hold on to your John Deere hats, folks. First up, though, we do know we want to talk with Jackie Folsom. She's the manager of the Vermont Farm Show, and she has her finger on the pulse here. Hello again, Jackie. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. It's so great to have you folks back.
So we mentioned in the very beginning of the show in our billboard that the Farm Show got started in 1930, a long time ago. So what was the purpose then, and is it still the purpose now?
Oddly enough, it is the same two groups that started it back in the 1930s. there was a fellow that wanted to do a special on dairy. And so they had a dinner with dairy, and they had a few people in come in and talk. And then the sugar makers got into the act. So the farm show actually began just as a meeting of those two associations to get together in downtown Burlington at the old Memorial Auditorium. And the next year, somebody from the ag agency got a hold of them and said, let's put some booths up and see what happens. And here we are, 85 years later, it is happening.
Yeah, and 85 years later, now you've got, 140 exhibitors and some 14,000 or so people who come through in the few days that it's up and running?
We do. We've been very lucky. You know, the weather comes and goes kind of around us, so with a nice flat venue and with free admission and parking, we're really a draw for all sorts of people. And the Agency of Agriculture has updated Consumer Night, which will be happening tomorrow night. They've made it a lot of fun. It's that in particular is a farmer's market, plus the legislative cook-off, which is a little bit of smack talk going on down at the State House. I've been down there
already.
Listening to, the House Ag Committee wants that silver plate back. So,
why? Well, who got it last year?
I believe it was the Agency of Agriculture. So you have to be careful. They bring in chefs and they don't tell you, you know. So
there is cheating. I was just talking to Chuck Ross, the Secretary of Agriculture, and he acted like, I got no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, well, you know, you just have to go with the flow. It'll be fun tomorrow night. There's a secret ingredient. Last year it was perch from Lake Champlain. And this year it's a four-legged critter. But it'll be secret when they open up the box and see what the food is that they have to cook. So that'll be fun.
But so we know it's not a bug then, but that four-legged critter leaves a lot to the imagination.
There's a lot of them around, so you'll have to find out what it is. Farm show is really great for people of all ages and all kinds to come in, and it is a trade show. But you know, now that the the Bee Association has the honey contest in their booth, people who might be interested in having a backyard hive can come in, talk to them, find out the complications, the challenges, and the opportunities. The same with the sugar makers. There's a lot of people that like to get into that, tap a couple trees, and those folks are meeting right now. But we try to keep it really educational, not just for the farmers. There's a lot of kids coming around today, and we actually had a VoTech class from Danville High School come in, which was great because we love having the young people around.
Jackie Folsom mentioned the beekeepers and the sugar makers. We're going to be talking to both of those organizations today.
Nice.
As we broadcast live from the farm show, as well as we'll also be talking about farmers' health. We're going to be talking about some of the other issues in farming and agriculture right now. And if you would like to share your thoughts, your perspective, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or, hey, come on down to the Champlain Valley Expo. We are in a booth in the South Hall, not far from the giant tractors, and you can find us right here and ask a question if you'd like. You know, Jackie Folsom, in the internet era, is it really necessary still to have this where people all come together? I mean, people can find out information about backyard beekeeping online if they want to.
That is very true. But one of the things about this farm show that's a little different from one in Harrisburg or in Syracuse is that this is almost like a real homecoming for a lot of farmers and a lot of people. I've been around the buildings a couple times today. I've seen people who haven't had cows in their barn for 20 years, but they still come because they see old friends, they see new technology, they see things that have changed or have not changed as far as what they're doing. And, you know, we also have the UVM Extension booths with a lot of education that people who still own land but maybe are not farming it would need, as well as we have all the USDA groups here. There's APHIS and Rural Development and Farm Service Agency. So it's just a nice time to come in. You might want to do estate planning. You might want to look at doing beef cows instead of dairy cows. It definitely is a place, though, most of all, to see old friends.
You know, one of the things that I've always wondered is, how do you handle the coordination of the setup here? Which, you know, sounds kind of dry, but if you come to the farm show, you can see there is so much stuff here. I mean, there's a horse right down from us. There are huge tractors. So I imagine you have to somehow coordinate so you're getting, like, the tractors in before all the people with their folding tables are setting up that and their papers, because otherwise there's no room for those enormous machines to maneuver.
We've learned, so this is the fifth year that this show's been up here, and we've learned something every year. One of the things we learned early on was to please invite all the big equipment dealers in early on Monday, setup day, because we actually use 3 forklifts to bring this equipment in. And so that's why you'll notice when you come through the buildings, you'll see all the big equipment dealers at the ends, because we get them in and then we ask them to leave so that all the little guys can come in. I have great help this year. I have new staff. So Glenn Rogers, who's an extension agent, and Dave Adams have come in and just taken over the buildings and done a great job. But clearly I would not be able to do this without the help of Champlain Valley Exposition and all their wonderful staff, because my walkie-talkie's always on, and if I need a chair or a banner hung or something moved, I get on it and they go, "Yes, ma'am," and they do it. So we are very grateful that they've made time for us to come up here. They give us a nice price for the building, and everybody, I think, really appreciates being inside, being warm, and being all on one floor.
How much does it cost to be an exhibitor?
$360 for a 10x10 booth, and that's the only size we have. We have multiples of 10x10. The price has only gone up $10 in 20 years, and that's because we ended up paying a lot for electricity the first year we moved up here, and so now the booth people pay for it. But it's a pretty good investment for 3 days. You get all the publicity that we do up here. There's a lot of media that come up, as well as you folks, and they just have a chance to interact and see other people and have a good time for 3 days. It's a good investment for anybody.
And just to remind people, it is free to come and be an observer, be a participant here, wander around, but you are asking for donations to the food shelf.
We are asking for cash donations to the Vermont Food Bank, and then we're also asking for boxed or canned food, and that will go to the Chittenden County Emergency Food Shelf.
That's Jackie Folsom. She's manager of the Vermont Farm Show and vice president of the Vermont Farm Show Board. Jackie, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for coming in. We look forward to having you again.
Good. All right. Well, I guess that's our plan for next year. We've already reserved our booth.
That's right.
We are here at the Farm Show live today. We're broadcasting from the Farm Show at the Champlain Valley Expo. And we're talking about some of the things that are interesting here at the Farm Show. We're talking about farmers' health and looking at other things that are of interest. We're going to be talking with the Chestnut Association. Chestnuts, big blight. What's happening now with chestnuts in Vermont? We're going to be discussing that. And if you'd like to share your thoughts, if you're in agriculture and maybe not here today, but you want to add what you think is really important to be talked about by this community, you can call 1-800-639-2211 or stop by our booth. Mark Canella is with UVM Extension. He's a farm business specialist and a professor at UVM, and he joins us now. Hi, Mark. Nice to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you work on the Farm Viability Program. What exactly is that?
So at University of Vermont Extension, we've got a variety of farm business programs, and Farm Viability is really our catch-all from everything from workshops and outreach publications straight through to one-on-one business coaching and intensive business plan development work with farm owners.
How did you get into this?
I was a farmer at Shelburne Farms for several years and decided to go back and study applied economics, and turned a lot of heads when I went from organic horticulture into applied economics. And ever since then, going around with a calculator and talking with people about mathematical and business decisions has been, it's been a need, and people have been thrilled to work with our programs.
You know, that question of viability is obviously a huge one for anybody who is trying to consider whether or not to stay in the industry, maybe pass a farm along to the next generation, or even just thinking about whether or not to get into this as a young person. Is farming a viable business in Vermont? We keep hearing still about small farms failing, especially in the dairy sector. What do you tell people?
People can make and lose money at all scales, in all types of operations, in all sectors. When I moved last year into East Montpelier, I found a historic agricultural journal from 1890, and I found a chapter on farm business management. And there were quotes about how a certain percentage of the farm population was making good money, a certain population was just getting by, and there was a certain population that were losing money and having struggles. And I don't think it's any different. So what we really try to emphasize is that it's really about management and less about circumstance. And circumstance certainly plays in with farm managers, but we try to help them enhance their ability to look at their farm as a business and take control of that decision making, so it's not so much of them being subject to the situations around them, but them making those decisions for themselves. And there are some bright, shining places in agriculture with people making good money, and we're not afraid to say that, you know, profit isn't a dirty word in our group at all.
I understand, though, that some people still call you names in the Farm Viability Program.
Oh, yeah.
What do they call you, dream quashers?
Yeah, well, within our group and our staff meetings, we call ourselves reality enhancers.
Ah, that's a nice spin on it.
Doesn't look so good on a T-shirt, but we've been dubbed the dream squashers. And I think that's a hard nickname, but at the same time, a lot of our group, I think, is pretty proud to know that we help a lot of folks maybe turn down some business ideas on paper. Red ink looks a lot better on paper or a projected financial budget than it does when it's for real. And it can be tough for people, but we challenge them with some very relevant questions to see if that business can float and help them achieve their goals.
So that's through business plans and figuring out a marketing plan and just really thinking about the down and dirty basics of how you do this business?
Exactly. We start off with asking people about their goals and their objectives. We have teams of people that are skilled in financial statement preparation, and we certainly talk about marketing plans and finding buyers. But what we challenge people to do is go past their vision and their goals, and we challenge them to come up with information-based analysis to show that it could happen. And there's a lot of farms that get by on sheer will and hard work, but we want to make sure that some of those plans are smart to begin with.
Mark, just before we let you go, we're going to be talking with the sugar makers in a little while on this program, but I understand that's one of the interesting sectors for you in looking at farm viability. What's so interesting about that sector?
Well, in the past 3 years, we've just piloted a maple business benchmark project, which has allowed us to really hybridize our on-farm direct business management education with applied research. So we were able to go out with farm or maple producers and help them do cost of production analysis and teach them how to do that. Then we're able to take all that information and create some publicly shared industry benchmarks to say, here are the cost of production in your sector. Here are some of the performance metrics that people are using to evaluate the health of their business. And it's been very well received because right now, as you'll learn, the maple industry is having some challenges with prices. No different than what we hear in the dairy sector. And so to have a group of people talking about cost of production and to be able to triangulate that with their market strategy has been it's been so well received, and it's been really exciting to have a group of people that are willing to say, we'll do the numbers and we'll make some decisions based on what we learn. It's a great project.
Well, we can't wait to hear more from the sugar makers. Mark Canella is with UVM Extension. He works on the Farm Viability Program. He's a farm business specialist and a UVM professor. Mark, thank you so much for talking to us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And we are going to talk with the sugar makers in a little while. It's interesting to think about that idea of price volatility or perhaps prices going down over time when we seem to think in maple it's just up, up, up. And in fact, the export market is still very strong. So we will be talking with sugar makers. We're going to be talking with the Chestnut Association. We're going to be talking with a lot of people here about what's going on in the Vermont agriculture sector. But for the moment, we're going to stay here with UVM theme for a few more minutes to learn about Alpha Gamma Rho, the agriculture fraternity. And our guest is Andy Myrick. He's UVM class of 91, also got a master's degree there in 98, and now in a doctoral program. And he's a member of Alpha Gamma Rho. Andy, nice to have you on the program.
Good to see you, Jane.
All right, so Alpha Gamma Rho is a fraternity specifically geared towards young men or men who want to have a job, a career, a role in the agriculture industry. Why?
Well, it's actually, we're known as a social professional fraternity. So it's sometimes less of the social and more of the professional. I teach now at Vermont Technical College, so many of the skills that I learned when I was at the fraternity in Burlington and the people that I met, who I run into today, contributed to my career.
How?
Well, today's sort of old home day. Even though I teach construction management, I still have a number of tentacles into the ag field. I grow berries at home. I make a little syrup now and again. And we worked on professional appearance, professional demeanor, and professional performance when I was there as an active student. There's a lot of mentoring that happened. I was a first-generation college student, so I had brothers who had attended college before me, but not my parents. It's actually fairly common in Vermont. And it was a strong support group, and that support group was for living skills as well as study skills and performance, academic performance. We had a much higher than the non-Greek average in the fraternities that were.
You also told our producers that one of the most interesting or important parts of being a member of Alpha Gamma Rho early on when you were a young man was the idea of how you should treat women.
Yes. One of the things that was that has stayed with me, now I met my wife as part of an event at one of her events there in Burlington, but we were taught early on that we were expected to treat all of the women that we came into contact with in the same way that we would treat the little sister of one of our fraternity brothers. And it was very poignant to me at the time, and it was the idea of non-objectification, it was the idea of respect, and it's something that stayed with me. And that also is a professional goal as well.
Why is a fraternity, and you said it's more of a professional networking in some ways than a social group, although the social aspect of it is still important to Alpha Gamma Rho, why is it important to have, you know, this organization that is really looking specifically at the agriculture industry in particular?
Well, it's a broad range. In Vermont, it's tough not to be touched by the agriculture industry. Construction is related to this, from construction of dairy barns to even retail outlets for maple syrup. Those are all construction related. Our tourism industry is heavily dependent on the agricultural industry. As a piece of that, higher education is very important for those decision makers, policy makers, and managers to develop those skills that are going to be leaders in that field. And also, in such a, well, I can say large in the sake of Vermont, but not necessarily nationwide, but UVM was a big place, and UVM, I was allowed to discover my own community there, and that community was part of Alpha Gamma Rho. There are other communities as well, but that's one of the benefits of UVM, is that really strong support group in many different fields, and agriculture happened to be part of my background, and that's where I gravitated to.
That's Andy Myrick. He was UVM class of 91 and 98. And when?
As soon as possible.
For the doctorate, as soon as possible. And he's a member of Alpha Gamma Rho, which has a chapter at UVM. Andy, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Jane.
We are broadcasting live from the Farm Show today. We're talking about all things ag. We're talking about forestry. We're talking about beekeeping coming up. We're also going to be looking at farmers' health. This is a particular area of interest for some people, and certainly for farmers. There are a lot of issues with very stressful working conditions, both physically and often emotionally and mentally. So we'll be looking at farmers' health coming up here as Vermont Edition broadcasts live from the Farm Show at the Champlain Valley Expo. More to come here on Vermont Edition. You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and that noise you hear in the background is the hubbub of the Vermont Farm Show at the Champlain Valley Exposition. We are broadcasting live from the Farm Show today, as we've done for the last 2 years, and we're having a great time. We've got a Morgan horse down the way, just neighed. I wish you could have heard that, but you can hear all of the people coming and going, looking at farm equipment, trying to figure out maybe what they need for the coming season. If you'd like to share your thoughts, if you're in agriculture and maybe not at the Farm Show, you can call 1-800-639-2211. And if you are here, come on by our booth. We're in the South Hall. We'd love to see you. We're turning now to Michael Willard. He's president of the Vermont Beekeepers Association. Michael, nice to have you on the program.
Oh, thanks for having us.
And I understand today is a big meeting for the beekeepers.
Yes, the Vermont Beekeepers Association has held, in conjunction with the Vermont Farm Show, our annual winter meeting for years. So it's a great partnership.
So you want to have your annual and winter meeting inside when it's nice and warm and the bees aren't all outside?
That's right, exactly.
What are the big issues that you're going to be talking about today?
Today we're focusing on a lot of kind of local issues. We have our keynote speaker was Michael Palmer from French Hill Apiaries, and he was speaking to our club members today really how to promote the sustainable apiary idea where beekeepers in Vermont can produce their own locally or regionally acclimated bees, so we're not quite as dependent on having bees come from the south or other parts of the country which may not overwinter or work well here in Vermont.
Are you seeing more beekeepers getting bees that have been bred here?
You know, it's something that we've really been promoting over the years, and we've had a queen rearing grant, and we hold a workshop at the Intervale every year.
That's a farm in Burlington for
that's right.
People who don't live up in
and so we are very active in promoting this with our club members, and so we offer workshops and try to really pay it forward and teach them how to keep their own bees and produce these what are called nucleus colonies that really help them as beekeepers not be dependent on either ordering bees or getting bees from out of state.
This has been a very bizarre winter so far for many people. What's it like for the bees to have had very warm, non-snowy December, really quite warm leading up to the end of December? Then we got a cold snap. Today it's above freezing. How are the bees faring?
You know, that's a great question. We've been getting a lot of those. Like, what's happening with the bees? And it has been a mild winter up to date. So the benefit of that is that the milder weather has allowed the bees to have their cleansing flights. So they're able to get outside and defecate, where sometimes in wintertime, end of November, beginning of December, we could go for a three-month stretch where the bees are not able to leave the hive. And in this winter, they've had plenty of cleansing flight opportunities. So in that regard, it's a benefit. The downside is maybe they're a little more active than they might have been otherwise, so maybe they're consuming more food stores than they might have. So beekeepers will have to be diligent in making sure that their hives have enough feed come February and March.
Are most beekeepers in Vermont small-scale beekeepers? I'm in my first overwintering as a backyard beekeeper, so are most people like me, or are you seeing people doing this as an actual profession?
Most beekeepers in Vermont are small hobbyists. We have a handful, like a dozen commercial beekeepers that do it for a living. There's a handful of sideliners that make a little money on the side, but most are hobbyist beekeepers.
And what's the latest on bee die-offs? No colony collapse disorder officially in Vermont, but we're certainly seeing die-offs.
Yeah, so nationally speaking, the historic number since 2006, the colony collapse disorder, the bee die-off, annually has been around 33% every year. And what's happened over the last 2 years is the data has shown a slight increase nationally, and so it's up around 42% and 43%. So there's growing concern about what the general causes are.
And that 42%, 43% holds true in Vermont, you think? Or
there's no real data that supports the Vermont numbers, but anecdotally, our numbers are less than that. Because we don't have a lot of commercial beekeepers that are transporting their hives for pollination services across the country thousands of miles.
You know, last year in the legislature, there was a bill that dealt with neonicotinoids and whether or not they should be banned in Vermont. Does the Beekeepers Association have a position on that?
That's a great question, and we've talked about it at a board level, and it's a very complex issue with a lot of unknowns. And so the board has not taken an official position on it. Certainly some of our members have. And when the bill was introduced, we had basically people come in and give expert witness testimony to the Agency of Agriculture so they could make an educated decision on that. And the bill was tabled for a number of reasons, but a lot of it is lack of information and the fact that it's a complex issue. And I believe it's going to be being reintroduced this year for consideration.
So you're keeping an eye on it, but probably still not weighing in with a specific position?
That's right, as an organization.
Do you take a specific position as an individual?
You know, I've done a lot of reading and research on my own, and it's very complex, and so there's new information that keeps coming out, and so I think we're learning more and more as we go along.
Very carefully phrased.
Yes.
That's Michael Willard, president of the Vermont Beekeepers Association. Thank you for talking with us, especially on a day when you've got your big meeting.
Oh, really, thanks for having us. We enjoy getting together.
We are Vermont Edition. We're broadcasting live from the Champlain Valley Expo, where the annual Vermont Farm Show is going on today through Thursday. Lots of events happening, including Consumer Night, as Jackie Folsom told us, which is Wednesday evening, a big cook-off. You're going to want to see that if you're anywhere nearby. We got a note from Ray, who posted online to say, I don't know if my dad ever went to the farm show. There were always too many chores to do, too little time, and too little help. So Ray's family, not a farm show family, but this was designed to be in the wintertime when perhaps, for some families at least, there was more of a chance to be able to come out and be social when the day is a little bit slower for many farmers. We're joined now by Carrie Patterson, Outreach Coordinator for Farm First. It's a nonprofit collaboration of the Agriculture Agency and UVM Extension, and she's here to talk with us a little bit about farmers' health. Carrie, it's nice to have you on the program.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So is that a specific issue for farmers that really needs highlighting, farmers' health?
Yes, and health in the broad spectrum. We're not talking about medical health. We're talking about all the needs that farmers and farm families have that they wouldn't go to their doctor for, which might be substance abuse, depression, anxiety, financial concerns, which is certainly a big issue, particularly with our dairy farmers now, legal issues, just all the complexities that cause stress in any working person's life, but particularly with the pressures unique to agriculture. Farm First is the one-stop shop. Give us a call. We'll just ask, how can we help?
And then what do you do?
And then based on the need, we'll either provide that support service or we will connect the farmer or farm family with the expert, the professional, the resource, the person that they need to connect with that will give them the information so that they can make good decisions, so that they can solve problems and move forward towards health and well-being in the broad sense.
Can you highlight some of the reasons why being in farming might contribute to both physical stresses and emotional and mental stresses?
Yeah, if you think about it, most of us go to work and we're not working with our spouses, we're not working with our adult children and their wives and husbands, so we've got in-law issues, we've got proximity. Farmers live where they work, and the hours are long, the work is physically hard, and then when you compound the pressures of weather, the things they can't control, milk prices, feed prices, fuel prices, all those things that are out of their control. Most of us go to work, and we know that we're going to be paid for the work that we do. In agriculture, there can be times when they're going to work for 12, 16 hours a day, and there's nothing coming back. And imagine the pressure. They still have to buy clothes and all the things that the rest of us have to purchase. So those pressures are really enormous. And they say lack of control can be the most difficult thing that we deal with. So compounding issues for those folks in agriculture.
So really you are often looking at psychological stressors and mental health issues for farmers that they may not feel comfortable being open about?
Absolutely. And there certainly are barriers for this population, which was raised with the you just take care of yourself. And we really want to encourage all of our folks in Vermont that are working on farms and working in agriculture, you don't have to do it by yourself. And getting good information and good resources and accessing professionals, it's really smart business and it's just a smart way to live. So we really work hard to overcome those barriers.
Carrie, how do you deal with what we know in Vermont is a real aging population, especially in the dairy sector, but in many of the different sectors of agriculture, we're seeing a population that's really reaching the upper ages of being able to work?
Absolutely. We can't fix those problems, but we can certainly help those folks that are aging and dealing, again, with the compounding issues of aging, whether that's physical or emotional, to help them, again, do the best they can, but also to work with them on succession, planning, the complexities of letting go, letting the next generation take over, or making those hard decisions after multiple generations, are you the person that's going to have to stop farming? Those are so difficult. And whatever choice folks that are getting older that are farming have to make, we want to help them do that in a healthy way. And then again, see what the next step of their life can be that can be fulfilling and satisfying.
So how do people find you?
It's a phone number. Gosh, I've got to put my glasses on. 1-877-493-6216. Give us a call, and all we'll do is say, how can we help you?
That's Carrie Patterson. She's Outreach Coordinator for Farm First. Again, that's a nonprofit collaboration with the Agriculture Agency and UVM Extension. We've been talking about farmers' health, and we will put a link up with that phone number that Carrie mentioned so you can find it if you weren't able to write it down just as she said it. We're broadcasting live from the Farm Show today. I'm Jane Lindholm. This is Vermont Edition. And we are joined now by John Turner, president of the Vermont chapter of the Farmer Veteran Coalition. John, nice to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I understand you're a veteran yourself.
Yes, ma'am.
And what's your service?
I was in the Marines as an infantryman and deployed three times between 2003 and 2007.
So what made you want to be part of this association, the Farmer Veteran Coalition?
You know, it's been a long road since I returned home from Iraq in 2006. And I think that having a strong community of veterans and civilian partners who are working to help people continue their service in some way, shape, or form is meaningful. And I think that veterans, they serve because they want to serve their communities. It's not so much about going to war, but it's about them actually doing good and noble causes. And I think that with the Farmer Veteran Coalition, you know, there's something cathartic about putting your hands into the soil. You know, there's microorganisms that when you interact with them, they release serotonin. So immediately when you go out into a field, you're building this wonderful relationship with this thing that, you know, produces life. And there's something very special about that.
Are you farming?
I am. I have a small forest farm in Bristol, Madison County, and we do a lot of education about regenerative agriculture and forest practices with community members, college students, veterans, and children.
Were you into farming before you came back from your service?
Not at all.
So this is all new for you?
Kind of. I've been doing it since 2009, and it was kind of on a whim that my now wife, we got a garden plot up at Rock Point School in Burlington. And since then, the plots of land have doubled and tripled and quadrupled in size to now we manage a farm and are doing outreach for this veterans organization to get veterans into agriculture.
You know, we just heard from Carrie Patterson some of the stresses on farmers that can lead to, you know, that stress is real and it leads to mental health problems, addiction sometimes. Yeah. I am wondering what your perspective on that is for veterans who also, as we know, are more prone to PTSD and addiction and certain issues with stress. Is farming a good industry to go into? I mean, you mentioned the serotonin of getting your hands in the earth, but what about all those stresses?
I mean, those are real. I mean, that happens, and the suicide rate among farmers is relatively high, too. But I think that for a lot of veterans that are getting into agriculture, whether or not they have their own farm operation, there's something about putting their hands in the soil that all the stress goes away, and they realize, you know, the appropriateness of sowing healthy seeds and, you know, managing their fields and or someone else's fields and then providing food for their communities. There's something very special and unique about that.
That question of managing somebody else's fields, are you finding that you have success with farmers and in having them welcome veterans to work on their farms and in their operations?
Yes, and we're actually in the process right now of developing partnerships with Cabot Creamery, with NOFA VT, as well as some of our local veteran farmers who are interested in hosting veterans as apprentices or interns and kind of mentoring them. And so we'll have both veteran and civilian mentorship programs that'll be adapted into our state. And Vermont is one of the first four state chapters of the Farmer Veteran Coalition. We stand beside Maine, Kansas, and Michigan. And so we all have the opportunity to bounce these, you know, pretty unique ideas off of each other to find out what works and how we can sustain, you know, veterans in agriculture, either on their own or with civilian partners.
That's John Turner. He's president of the Vermont chapter of the Farmer Veteran Coalition. It's really been a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for sharing your experience.
Thank you very much.
We're broadcasting live from the Farm Show today at the Champlain Valley Expo. More to come as we talk with Vermont sugar makers and the American Chestnut Association. And you can share your thoughts with us by writing to us. Send a note to vermontedition@vpr.net. And you are listening to Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and we are broadcasting live from the Vermont Farm Show today at the Champlain Valley Exposition. We are interviewing people of all stripes who are working here today, sharing their expertise in different sectors of agriculture. And we're hearing from a few of you. If you'd like to send an email, you can post it online at vpr.net. Just click on Vermont Edition. Or you can call 1-800-639-2211. I've been talking about how we're going to talk with the sugar makers. We're going to talk with the sugar makers. Well, now's the time, and we're joined by Ruth Goodrich. She is a member of the Vermont Sugar Makers, and she is the owner-operator of Goodrich Maple Farm in Cabot. Ruth, thanks for talking with us.
Hey, great to be here.
Well, we're especially excited to have you because you guys are in the middle of your meeting right now, and so this is especially nice of you to come join us.
I am sacrificing lunch for you.
Oh, no.
Yes.
What's lunch?
It looks like a beautiful buffet up there.
Oh, well, we'll get you back very quickly. So 2015, good year for sugar makers or not?
Kind of so-so, depending on the location. Low-lying areas, the weather broke early, it was pretty decent. For us up there on the ridges, though, by golly, the snow was pretty darn deep late in the season. We didn't get started till the 4th of April.
Whoa, really?
Yeah,
that's
so we
late.
Had a really abbreviated season.
So for you, not a great season then. It didn't last too long.
Well,
it
made
up pretty quickly.
It made up for lost time once we got going.
And then, though, the warm-up pretty fast, so short season?
Short season.
All right, so one thing I want to talk to you about are these new classifications. I am old school. I just cannot get used to these new, you know, robust flavor, bright color. What do people like them? I miss B. I miss my grade B maple syrup.
Well, it's still there, actually. It's now part of what we call the dark robust.
I know I can have it, but I want it to be labeled grade B.
You know, but grade B sounds so much inferior to grade A, and it used to be fancy A, B, C, and then we broke it up and got rid of the C, and everybody loved cooking with that dark syrup. And for now 25 for more years, we've had to put that in a barrel, call it commercial, and send it to the packers. And all that wonderful cooking syrup that people loved so much they couldn't get. And so now they can. It's back on the table again, and it's great, and I love to be able to retail that.
All right, so you're a fan of the new labeling and classification.
A lot easier to use, a lot easier to categorize when we're actually in production. It took a while to wrap our mind around it, but it's kind of a new-to-you sort of thing. We were in on the ground floor of it, so we've been seeing it coming now for about 10 years.
We did hear when we were doing shows on this a couple of years ago from some sugar makers who didn't like the idea of it, but you think most sugar makers, from what you're hearing from your colleagues, are on board?
It's been a pretty smooth transition. There's a lot of people that resist change. You know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But really, to be on board with the global market that we have today, we need to have wording that transcribes or that translates well into other languages, and that's what we've done.
All right, I want to talk to you about that global market because we were at the very beginning of the show talking to UVM Extension, and we were hearing that, you know, there's some volatility in the pricing, but also this is a global market. So where are Vermont sugar makers selling their products, first of all, outside of the U.S.?
Everywhere we can. It is a wonderful product. There's been a lot of publicity about sugars and its bad effects on our health for quite a while now, but the last couple of years it's really been out there. Maple syrup is better for you. It's healthier. It's lower on the glycemic index, loaded with antioxidants and minerals that are very essential. Lower in calories. It's just a wonderful thing. It's not just a luxury food. It's a health food. I know that Rodale's ranked at number 6 on their list of the 11 superfoods in the world.
Well, Ruth, you don't have to sell me on it.
It's
I'm a Vermonter. I've been hearing about it my whole life, but are people in, I don't know, Australia, China, India, I mean, are they now seeing the benefits?
Yeah. We're all a global community now. You can, in the palm of your hand, be in Siberia and go online and order something from Amazon.com. But it's a wonderful thing. Shipping is a little pricey to get it there.
But yeah, it's heavy.
It is heavy, but to some people that doesn't seem to be an issue. I tell them with your money and my syrup, we can go anywhere.
So what we were hearing as well is that maybe pricing is down a little bit. Is that true?
Well,
it seems to have been
what's,
going up
what's
and up
kicking
and up.
Us right now is the Canadian exchange rate. That's the big game changer. And, of course, you know, you'd like to be able to get the most you can for your product. But, you know, we want our customers to be able to be happy, too. You know, it's all determined. The price is determined by the Canadian Federation.
Right.
And the Canadian dollar.
The
is,
global reserve, right?
Yeah.
Didn't we hear about this last year? They have a strategic reserve.
Strategic reserve. It sounds like some big, you know, mysterious thing.
Really.
But basically, it's a big warehouse where they stockpile the syrup. And it's an important part of the industry. Canadians figure very large in all of this. We're all working together to make maple the number one natural sweetener for everyone in the world.
That's Ruth Goodrich. She's a member of the Vermont Sugar Makers, and she runs Goodrich Maple Farm in Cabot. Ruth, thanks for talking with us. I'll let you get back to the lunch.
Thank you.
We are broadcasting, as I said, live from the Vermont Farm Show today in the Champlain Valley Expo. Talking to all kinds of people today. Appreciate you sticking with us this hour as we hear from UVM Extension, from the Ag Fraternity, Alpha Gamma Rho, the beekeepers. We've talked about farmers' health, and we've looked at veteran farmers and the Veteran and Farming Coalition. Well, now we're going to turn to Kendra Collins. She's New England Regional Science Coordinator for the American Chestnut Foundation. Kendra, nice to have you on the program.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
So I was really interested in hearing that the American Chestnut Foundation was here at the farm show because I was thinking, why? What are you trying to sell or what are you trying to get out there?
Well, you know, we just are trying to get the word out of what we're doing. And certainly the farmers in Vermont are people who work outdoors and on the land. You know, occasionally we've actually found sites to help support some of our plantations through events like this. So it's not quite as much of a reach as it might seem like.
Well, back up and tell us why you're looking for places to have plantations for chestnut trees.
Sure. So if you're not familiar with the story of the American chestnut, we had a population of close to 4 billion American chestnuts in the eastern U.S. And in the late 1800s, we accidentally imported chestnut blight, which is a fungal pathogen. Within about 50 years, we lost most of our mature chestnut, so it wiped out all those 4 billion stems on about 200 million acres of forest between here in New England and all the way down to northern Georgia. So our program works to try and restore that species. So we work with mostly with a breeding program to breed resistance into our Native American chestnuts, and we really rely on a volunteer network to help host those plantings, help with those pollinations, and get those trees back on in the landscape.
And you have found places in Vermont to host those plantings?
Oh, yeah. Our Vermont New Hampshire chapters all volunteer. I'm the only staff person up here in New England, so I work with four different volunteer state chapters. But we have, and of course I'm on the air, seven or eight probably orchard sites across both states. So we've got some really great collaborators out there that that help us out a lot.
So are these just saplings, or are we still missing the nice, large, lovely chestnut trees?
Well, the trees that we utilize in our breeding program can be anywhere from stump sprouts that have just happened to hang on long enough to flower, and we can capitalize on that, pollinate them, use them for a couple of years, and move on, to occasionally a large tree. We have some large trees that we know of that we've been able to pollinate with bucket trucks or even tree climbers. We're at the northern edge of the range, so typically that means there were less chestnuts up here to begin with, but that also means there's less blight around, and so we tend to find some trees that have escaped blight and maybe survived to be mature, which is a pretty neat thing to see.
What is the role of the chestnut in Vermont forests?
Chestnut's a great forest species. It's a hardwood. It grows quickly. It's a reliable nut producer. So as a wildlife species, it's great. A lot of critters like eating chestnuts, which we actually find somewhat problematic in our orchards, but it's certainly a benefit if we can get them in the forest. As a wood producer, it's a nice, tall, straight, rot-resistant wood. People use it a lot for building barns, telephone poles, you know, any kind of buildings. You know, I think there's still log cabins down in the Smokies that are built right on the ground that are made out of chestnut and are just, you know, hanging out being log cabins.
So what percentage of the forest would you like to see be chestnut in Vermont?
Well, I think, you know, in Vermont we'd want to see chestnut back where chestnut belongs. So, you know, certainly in the areas that are dominated by colder species, you know, we're at the northern edge of the range for chestnut, but the southern counties, the Connecticut River Valley, the Champlain Valley, you know, any of those places that grow nice oak, you know, sort of the oak, chestnut, hickory forest type is where you would have primarily found chestnut. So anywhere we have those species would be a nice place to see them back in Vermont. And with changing climates, who knows? You know, more of Vermont might be hospitable to chestnut now than it used to be.
You mentioned that you are the only paid staff member for the for both states here for your chapter. Are you looking for more people to volunteer?
Oh, absolutely. Our organization, you know, aside from a few staff folks, it's primarily volunteer driven, and we can always use new volunteers to help find trees, to pollinate, to help with events like this where we just talk to people and inform them of the story of the chestnut. I mean, a lot of people were not alive when chestnuts were alive. So we have a little bit of an uphill battle to, you know, make folks recognize our tree and its importance on the landscape.
And you're optimistic it can happen?
Absolutely. It's a really great project to be involved with, and our volunteers are very passionate about what they're doing.
And do you think in your lifetime you're going to see lovely, beautiful big chestnuts?
Well, I've already seen some, so I'm going to say yes. But yeah, you know, our program's going well, and you know, we have a lot of great great partners and collaborators, and we're making good progress. So.
That's Kendra Collins. She's with the New England Regional Chapter of the American Chestnut Foundation. Kendra, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And Kendra's our last guest today as we've been broadcasting live from the Vermont Farm Show here at the Champlain Valley Exposition. This is the first day of the Farm Show, but it goes through Thursday. So if you're inclined to come on down and see some of the people we talked to or the many other exhibitors that you can find here, something like 140 exhibitors and 14,000 people come through during the few days that it's open, please stop on by. And I want to thank the Farm Show for letting us set up and do the broadcast here today. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri and Sam Gale Rosen with production assistance from Anna St. Marie. Mary Williams directed the show. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. Chris Albertine was our engineer, and a special shout out to Michelle Owens. You're going to want to tune in tomorrow. We're going to be talking about a legislative issue. One of the top topics at the State House this year is figuring out if employers should be required to offer paid sick leave to their employees. We'll take up the issue with a couple of advocates on opposite sides of the debate, and you can share your thoughts by writing to vermontedition@vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.